This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by our Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, in the beautiful, beautiful Melbourne. Well, it's almost as beautiful as Sydney. Adam? See what I did there? How are you going?
I did see what you did there, Henry. You let your insecurities show.
Oh, yeah, right. Melbournians don't have any insecurities whatsoever. They just want to be Sydney. Anyway, let's move on. Are you enjoying the Olympics?
Are they on? I've not watched a damn thing of it.
Neither have I.
So far, I've managed to avoid absolutely everything to do with the Olympics, which has been fabulous.
Yes,
thanks. You know,
it's difficult.
In these times of COVID, you've got to look for silver linings where you can find them.
Indeed. It's almost impossible to avoid it. I mean, I'm not into sports either. And we were saying, well, fair, I'm not a nationalistic person. I don't care. I mean, okay, Australia's doing really well. Good for them. Interesting here. Interesting point. There's a Melbourne in Florida. Did you know that?
I did know that, yes.
Hmm. And of course,
and there's I believe there's one in Canada as well.
There probably is. Of course, there's Dublin's all over the world, and there's Sydney's all over the world. Well, of course, we've got a correspondent, Dawn Drost, in Florida. Imagine if she lived in Melbourne. That would just be too confusing. Okay, Adam, welcome to the show. A lot to talk about. Gosh, I don't know where to start. I'll tell you what. Let's start about by talking about, here in Australia, summer, I'm not sure which state, free slices of pizza to encourage people to get vaccinated.
Seriously? What? Here's my take on this, Henry. Mm. If you get the COVID vaccine, no matter which one you get, we've only got two really here in Australia, which is the AstraZeneca and the Pfizer. Mm. If you get vaccinated, your chances of catching COVID dramatically reduce. Mm-hmm. Your chances of, if you do catch it, of going to hospital are dramatically reduced. Your chances if you go to hospital of having to go onto a ventilator are dramatically reduced. And your chances if you do go onto a ventilator of dying are dramatically reduced. I would have thought staying alive is all the incentive you need to get this vaccine.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I mean, people get confused by the posts I put up on Facebook. They think that I'm an anti-vaxxer. I'm not at all. I'm just talking about the media kind of shoving it down people's throat all the time. I just want to quote an email to one of the stations that I work on in Central Europe, RTI. Every Friday night, I go live on there with a bunch of people, including our own Rachel Brunson. And this guy wrote to the show, and he said, "Double jabbed, and it's still got me, despite all the publications saying that the symptoms are mild if you are vaccinated. I have been very poorly, chest pains, breathing tight, no taste, aching, and temperature. Please let everyone know on the show tomorrow to be careful, even if vaccinated. I'm fairly," he says, "I'm a fairly fit bloke, but I'm poorly with COVID. Had an ambulance come out earlier on the recommendation of NHS, that's the British Health Service, directly due to chest pains. I feel rough, but hoping the vaccine prevents serious effects. Feel like I have a very bad flu. Absolutely no taste. This Delta variant is awful. Easily bypasses the vaccines, especially in the Oxford, which is, I think, is the AstraZeneca.
Yes.
Pfizer is more effective. What do you think of someone who says, okay, I've had the two jabs, and by the way, he got the Oxford or AstraZeneca. What do you think of that, Adam?
Look, I think it's a very telling story. It's, you know, there's been so much miscommunication about these vaccines, particularly here in Australia. I'm not sure quite what the messaging is overseas on that, but here in Australia, it really started out being, you know, get the vaccines, it'll be the cure-all, it'll save you from everything. And that's just not the case. You know, the vaccine manufacturers have said themselves, this won't necessarily stop you from getting the virus. That's not what this is designed to do. Mm. It's designed to stop people from dying. It's designed to stop people from going into hospital when they catch it. It does look like these vaccines, it is harder to catch if you've got the vaccine. But it doesn't mean you can't catch it. And it does, and it also means that if you do happen to catch it and you've got it, the symptoms should be less severe than they would be if you didn't have the vaccine. You know, and so, yes, there are people that have had the vaccine, have double doses of the vaccine, and they still get it and they still get quite sick. And, you know, we will see, as time passes on, we will see people that have been double vaccinated, fully vaccinated, dying of this thing, because this virus is moving and mutating so quickly.
Yes, variants, yes.
Yeah. That, you know, the Delta variant, which is the one that we're struggling with here in Australia at the moment, you know, the AstraZeneca vaccine, or the Oxford one, you know, its efficacy rate is down around the 50% mark.
Gee, really?
Yeah.
Gosh. that's a bit of a worry.
Now, the Pfizer one is a bit higher. It's up around the, still, I believe it's in the sort of 80s and 90% mark. But, you know, it's better than the alternative, which is nothing.
Yes, and this is all we've got.
Exactly. You know, I'm far from an anti-vaxxer, and I, when these vaccines first started coming out, I was very hesitant about them, and I was quite public about my hesitancy about them. And I decided that I would not have the AstraZeneca one. But that decision was made based on a couple of overriding factors. One was there isn't a lot of this disease, this virus in the country at the time. So there was no reason for me to rush out and get the AstraZeneca vaccine straight away. I could have, because of the situation I was in, because I work from home, I don't have a social life anymore because that's based around the arts and there is no arts anymore. So, you know, I'm basically living in isolation anyway.
Yeah.
I decided that I could afford, I took an educated assumption of my personal circumstances, and I decided that I would wait until the Pfizer vaccine was available. Now, thankfully, I only had to wait a week, and then they changed that because of the blood clots for the AZ one, and they made the Pfizer one available to people in my age bracket. And so I've had the first Pfizer vac, and I've got the second one next week.
Wow. And tell me about any effects from the first Pfizer?
Yeah, look.
It's different
first
for
of all,
everyone.
Of course it is. The injection itself was painless. I didn't even feel it go in.
All right.
In fact, I'm not, I don't have an issue with needles. I couldn't inject myself, I don't think, but having somebody inject me is fine. Like, I have no issue. I'm not afraid of needles. I don't have a phobia with them. And if somebody's giving me a needle, I usually like to watch. I like to see what they're doing to me.
I look away.
To know what's happening to my body.
I look away. I just pretend, this is not happening. This is not happening.
And so she was getting my arm ready and everything, and she was chatting to me, and next minute she put the Band-Aid on, and I went,
it's done.
What's going on? And she went, I injected you. You're done. And I went, okay.
It's a lovely thing.
I literally felt her wipe the patch with what I imagine is a disinfectant of sorts.
Yeah.
And the next minute she was putting the Band-Aid on, and I was like, done. Anyway,
so
the next day, that was an afternoon shot. I had it like 3:20 in the afternoon. I was fine the rest of that day, went to bed, woke up the next morning. I felt absolutely normal when I first woke up. But once I sat up in bed and I started to do things, my arm did get very sore. So I did have a very sore left arm for that day, for the day after. And I had a very slight headache.
That
was it for me. Day two, it was as if I'd never had anything.
Wow. Okay, that's good news, isn't it?
Mm.
I just want to do a station ID here. This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I've got our Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, on the line from beautiful Melbourne. Now, Indigenous children, I read this from Australia's National Broadcasters News website, the ABC. Indigenous children and those with underlying conditions, aged 12 to 15, now eligible for Pfizer COVID vaccine. Harder to get Pfizer, I assume, because of this, Adam, for everyone else.
Oh, look, we are in a world of pain here in regards to vaccines in Australia. The messaging around AstraZeneca, why can I not say that word, that company name?
just call it AZ.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
The messaging around the AZ vaccine in this country has been botched so monumentally badly by the government. And of course, that was their mainstay. They, when the rest of the civilized world was signing 4, 5, or 6 deals with different for different types of vaccines, our knuckleheads running this country settled for predominantly the AZ vaccine and a little bit of Pfizer as a backup. And then July last year, Pfizer actually came to the Australian government and said, we can provide you with enough vaccine to vaccinate your entire country with the Pfizer vaccine. And our idiot Prime Minister said, no, no, that's fine. We've organised the AstraZeneca one.
Because he did a big deal. Like, he did some financial deal to get tons of the AZ, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, also, we can manufacture the AZ vaccine here in the country, here in Australia. We can't manufacture the Pfizer one.
Okay.
In this country yet, we don't have the technology.
Interesting.
And so he thought, and I can sort of understand on a degree, on a level, I can understand his thought processes. His thought processes were, well, all of these vaccines are going to be safe. Well, that's his first error. But then we can make this one in the country, so it's going to be the quickest one to get out to people. And we'll be creating jobs in the country by doing it. And, you know, so I can get why he wanted to use the AZ vaccine. But then it got to a point where it was only suitable for over 40s. Then it was only suitable for over 50s, and then it was only suitable for over 60s.
No wonder people were confused.
Then it was available to anyone over 18 if they spoke to their doctor.
keep up with this stuff.
And then you had the Queensland Health Chief Health Medical Officer coming out and saying she wouldn't give it to anyone under the age of 60. It's just been such a monumental stuff up of messaging around that vaccine
in
that
Australia.
Most Australians now don't want to have it.
It's been such bad media. What do you think? Do you think the commercial media in this country are responsible in the way they report this stuff?
To a degree, yes. They do love a good headline. They do love a good sensational headline.
Yeah.
And most Australians don't bother reading much past the headline. They've certainly, I think, made the situation worse, but they were given the story in the first place. They didn't come up with the story. They didn't invent the story. Like, you know, the messaging around it has been so botched by the government.
Yes.
You know, you can't blame the media for making this up. They're not. They're just telling it as it is.
They got it on a plate, didn't they? They really did.
Absolutely.
The media, they're loving this stuff.
Yep. And of course, so now the vast majority of the country wants the Pfizer vaccine. And he only inked a deal for a very small amount of Pfizer. And so now we're scrambling to get Pfizer from anywhere we can get it. And, you know, in New South Wales at the moment, because they're in lockdown with a massive outbreak of Delta at the moment, they're now taking the second shot of Pfizer from rural New South Wales to give to year 12 students in Sydney so that they can go back to school.
Oh, how angry are they in rural New South Wales?
Yeah.
What do you think about that
situation where we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. The stupid thing about that is that this virus is constantly looking for new people to infect and new places to go.
And new age groups.
And so what they've done in New South Wales at the moment, and this blows my mind, is they want to get year 11 and 12 students back into high school. I understand that. And they've said the best and safest way to do that is to give them the Pfizer vaccine.
Yeah.
So what they've done is they're taking vaccine from surrounding Sydney and giving it to people in Sydney. Now, all that is going to do is open up the opportunity for this virus to spread further from Sydney and into regional New South Wales, because they'll be less vaccinated. And, you know, if you track the Delta variant of this virus, that's exactly what it does. It constantly hunts out the lowest vaccinated populations.
Very interesting.
And so, if, you know, of course, there's no right or wrong way to do this. There's no rule book, as all these politicians keep saying on this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would have thought the most, you know, Sydney's already in lockdown. It's too late to stop it there. It was too late to stop it here in Melbourne. Brisbane's the same. Adelaide, you know, each capital city in this country has gone through this and will go through it again.
Yes.
What's important is make sure that, you know, keep up our vaccination program in the cities, of course, but don't take vaccines away from the regions, because that's just going to make them a bigger target for this virus.
I see what you're saying, and we're not hearing, we talked about the media, we're not really hearing what you've just said in the mainstream media. We're just hearing a lot of people screaming and shouting in rural New South Wales, and I frankly don't blame them, you know.
Oh, look, if I had had my first jab, which I have, and I was waiting for my second jab, and I'd got that text message to say, sorry, it's been cancelled, try again in a few weeks' time, I can't imagine how angry I'd be.
And it's going to be more than 2 or 3 weeks' time. You know, they keep underestimating the timescapes of these things and predicting that we're all going to be, you know, having Christmas together. I just want to quickly...
Their predictions count for nothing. I mean, they're completely and utterly meaningless.
Why do they do
every
it?
Forecast they've made, they've not been able to deliver. They're doing it because, and this is something that's frustrated me the whole time through this, they do it because they're trying to respond to a health crisis with a political solution.
Yes, politics.
They don't. They want to protect themselves politically.
Mm. I just quickly want to mention Melissa Greimer, our other correspondent, who is normally in Melbourne. We normally talk, the three of us together, on this broadcast. She went to New Zealand for a holiday after six attempts to take holidays, was in Wellington, and that's when we talked last week. And then she went up to the Gold Coast, which is near Brisbane in the state of Queensland. And now she's stuck in the Gold Coast because she tried to get to Darwin, up in the Northern Territory, and she would have to go via Brisbane. Now she's had to cancel her flight to Darwin and is now hoping that by next Sunday, as we record, by next Sunday, when the lockdown, which has been extended to 10 days or something, that she'll be able to get back to Melbourne. I will try and talk to her this week on the show. Just very briefly, Adam, what do you think about her scenario? She seems to be one day ahead of this virus. It's like following her something.
This is not a go at Melissa. You know, I think Melissa's handled it quite well.
Sure.
The situation she finds herself in. Mm. But anyone who's travelling at the moment...
This is the risk.
...has to expect that this will happen to them. Mm. You know, I get so fed up when I see people getting off planes in airports in this country when there's a snap lockdown, and they're going, oh, I can't, what am I going to do now? I didn't know this had happened. It's like, well, you're an idiot. If you didn't know that this could happen, you're an idiot.
Your boyfriend went up to Brisbane, didn't he?
Yes.
But was it
fully
okay
fully aware of the situation, fully aware that there was a possibility that he would have to isolate.
So what you're saying is that he understood the risks.
Absolutely.
And he wasn't going to complain if he was stuck in Brisbane.
Well, not publicly. He probably bitch and complain to me about it. But absolutely, you know, and we spoke before he went. And, you know, at one point he was like, am I silly going? And I was like, well, if you don't go to this, because at the time neither was it in lockdown.
Yes, that's right.
I said, you know, if we don't travel when no one's in lockdown, for the fear that something might go into lockdown, we're never going to travel anywhere ever again.
Yeah, that's right. You got it. So, just getting back to Melissa, because I know that your boyfriend had reasons to go to Brisbane. His mum lives there, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And things that you're doing in terms
and
of...
we're moving there, so
you're
we had to go up to organise some things.
Like, yeah, of course.
Some things you can't do remotely.
But Melissa was desperate. I mean, it was six or seven times that she wanted to take... her company, the people she works for, kept on saying, take a holiday, and she's going, I can't. And eventually she did.
Yeah.
So she felt under pressure to take holidays, as far as I understand, from her employers. Mm. I may be wrong about that. Even though she was...
That pressure is going to build right across this country because...
You're damn right, yeah.
Companies don't like having people sitting there with a huge balance of accrued annual leave because it costs them money. It's seen as a debt for them on their books.
Mm.
So... And this has been 2 years now, well, coming up to 2 years.
Yes.
Of people not being able to go on holidays. So we get 4 weeks annual leave a year in this country. So
aren't we lucky?
Soon,
I can hear people listening to us in Ireland and Britain where they only get 2 weeks, and in America, yeah, I think they only get 1 week. We're so lucky, aren't we, Adam?
And
it's accruing, right.
But it's accruing. So, you know, towards the end of this year, most of Australia is going to have 8 weeks worth of annual leave sitting there. That's going to build and build. So there's going to be more and more circumstances where companies are telling staff they have to take annual leave. But, you know, I don't blame Melissa for travelling.
Mm.
I don't blame anyone for travelling.
As long as they understand, right.
As long as you understand the risks.
Mm.
And if you are unfortunate enough to get caught up in those risks and you get stuck somewhere, or you end up somewhere that you didn't plan to go, or you have to go into isolation, you know, those, you travel knowing that these are possibilities.
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, I think Melissa's aware of this anyway. She, as you said earlier, you got to do something. You can't, you know, she can't take, what's the point in her? She lives alone in a tiny flat in Melbourne. And if she's to take a holiday at home, it's no holiday, is it?
No,
you know what
absolutely
I mean?
Not. And, you know, you can't book accommodation anywhere.
She did manage to in the Gold Coast. She's booked a really posh apartment there.
You can get some, absolutely. Mm. But if it goes into lockdown, you're going to lose that booking.
Yeah. Oh, if you plan it, yes.
Yeah. Mm. You know, so, and as I said a minute ago, you know, I think Melissa's handled this really well. You know, she's upset, she's frustrated, I get that. Mm. But she's not being ridiculous with it. Like, she's not going, oh, I didn't realise, I didn't know, nobody told me.
No, because she's been on our airwaves, and also she's a very intelligent woman. And that's why she's on our airwaves. She's totally aware of this stuff. I just want to quickly ask you about money.
Yes. Now,
We
I'll have as much as you can give me, thanks.
interesting, isn't it, how, you know, people have more money because they haven't been able to take holidays, and all this money's building up in people's accounts. I've got a friend in the UK, in Liverpool, who sells cars. He buys and sells cars, and because of the lockdown, people have been not laid off work, but they can't use cars anymore, or maybe their employers have said you can't use a company car anymore, and they're buying heaps of cars. Other people are buying really stupid stuff because they can't spend it on travelling. Isn't that interesting?
It is. There's no travel. And also, when we go into lockdown, and you know, here in Melbourne, we've spent 6 months in lockdown in the last 18 months in this city in Melbourne.
Yeah.
You can't go out and shop either.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky enough to keep working, and most of us have been able to keep working or at least keep an income coming through, whether it be JobKeeper or whatever, but there's nothing to really spend that money on. And so, yes, people are building. And that's why the property market has exploded in this country.
I know, it has, especially in the big cities like Melbourne and Sydney.
There was a boy, a very strange enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you ever learned just to love and be loved in return. Thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
iTunes International, virus free.
Around the world and down your street.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with our political correspondent here in Australia, Adam Devlin in Melbourne. I'm Henry in Sydney. Interesting headline here that came to light just before we came to air. Venues will soon be able to ask patrons for proof of coronavirus vaccinations. Now, I want to get back to our illustrious Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. Tell me this story.
Yeah, he's indicating that as more of the population gets vaccinated, then part of the way to open things up again, part of the way that we can have things like theatre happening and you know, in concerts and galleries and even nightclubs and pubs and restaurants, is if we have a vaccination passport as such, which means that the venue will be able to ask you to prove that you've been vaccinated. And if you haven't been vaccinated, they can refuse your entry and service.
Mm.
Now,
what do you think of this?
Look, if it was introduced right now, I would say it's outrageous because of his errors. There isn't enough vaccine for everyone to get vaccinated.
Which is his fault.
Which is his fault.
But
I'm never a fan of discrimination on any level.
Isn't there this kind of suggestiveness of him? Because in that same press conference, he said, oh, you know, people who own restaurants and people who own companies, they shouldn't be allowed to ask if you have been vaccinated. Mm. And in the same sort of...
Well, legally, right now, as we stand here right now, Henry, in this country, a business is not allowed to ask you if you've been vaccinated, legally.
But this suggestive stuff that he's done is going into people's heads. People are thinking, you may be just suggesting this as maybe a, you know, a test, but it really is going in the wrong direction. You know what I mean?
Well, what the message is giving is that it's okay to ask people for their private medical history,
mm-hmm.
which is illegal in this country.
Mm.
So what's going to happen is, and I suggest it will happen, this came out today, I suggest this will start happening tomorrow. Some businesses will start saying to people, show me you're vaccinated. And they'll say you've got no right to ask me that.
Yes. And this is going to be very messy.
It's going to be hideously messy.
Mm. So why would Scott Morrison do this? I mean, isn't this provocative?
Because it's the only quiver in his bag. It's the only arrow in his quiver, sorry. Mm. Is he can't get more vaccine because Pfizer are just, you know, they're giving us everything that they can give us, but it's not enough.
Mm.
He's got to be seen to be doing something.
This is a very dangerous move.
Oh, like everything else he's done.
This is true.
It's just outrageous that he's even put this out there today. Of course, in typical Morrison style, it's just a thought bubble. There's nothing behind it. There's no process set out. He's got to actually form legislation, present the legislation to the parliament, get it through both houses of the parliament, have it signed off by the governor general, and then it becomes law. Then he can say, okay, here's our vaccination passport legislation. It's now been passed. It's now law. Now you can start asking for this evidence and do it in this way. He hasn't even said yet how you're meant to prove that you've been vaccinated.
It's absurd.
Like, you get this little blue card with your dose one date on it and your dose two date on it. I'm holding mine in my hand as we speak, and it's, you know, it's got Adam Devlin. Type of vaccine was Pfizer. First date was the 15th of the 7th. Second dose is blank. I take this back with me, and they put the date on it when I get the second one. So that's the only thing I've got at the moment that shows that I've been vaccinated, and it's just a business card.
It's another.
You can print them up, but go to Officeworks and print a dozen of them off and start flogging them off to people who don't want to be vaccinated.
It is a kind of another form of identity. You know, in America, you have to have an identity card with your picture on it. Of course, here in Australia, we use our driver's license because it's got a picture on it. I just want to move slightly away, although it's really hard to move away from this pandemic. But this is slightly moving away. Zoom agrees to set, according to the New York Times, Zoom has agreed to settle a lawsuit over what they call Zoom bombing. The company said it would pay $85 million to settle the suit, which claimed that it violated users' privacy in part by allowing hackers to interrupt online meetings. I've never Zoomed in my life, and I don't think I ever will. I've got no cameras. I've got three computers around me. We're a radio. We don't do TV. What do you think? And you've obviously used Zoom, because I think you're talking to family.
Yep, use Zoom for family, for work, you know, social stuff. I've used Zoom a few times. It's a great function. It's a great little tool to use.
It's very simple, straightforward. Only if you're beautiful, and I'm not, because I'm growing a beard. I think I'm growing a beard. I'm not sure. I haven't checked. I'm afraid to look in the mirror. I think I've just, you know, kind of turned into a prehistoric version of a human being.
So, look. It sounds a lot, you know, $85 million, whatever it was.
Oh, it's nothing for them.
It's nothing for them. But also, you know, under the settlement, and I'm just reading this from the article, under the settlement, which still requires the approval of a federal judge, Zoom subscribers would be eligible to receive a 15% refund on their primary subscription or $25, whichever is the greater. So the most anyone's going to get out of this is $25. Like, seriously? Why are we bothering?
I think Zoom is owned by an Asian guy in Hong Kong who must have loved this virus, if you know what I mean.
It is this pandemic. A small
lots of people
number
are
of people
money.
Have made an absolute fortune out
I reckon
of this
a
pandemic.
Lot of people have made a lot of money out of this. And what really intrigues me and annoys me, there's a company called Harvey Norman. If you're listening in Ireland, Harvey Norman, strangely enough, are in Ireland, but they're an Australian company. That guy, I mean, tell us about that. Didn't he get all this money from the government, Jerry Harvey?
Jerry Harvey, yes. He signed up for JobKeeper. Now, just very briefly, JobKeeper was a program that the government brought in at the beginning of this, which said that if your company had lost a certain percentage of sales or revenue and they couldn't afford to pay you anymore, then the government would pay the company up an amount of money, and then they would pass that on to you. And so what would happen is the company would sign up to the government for JobKeeper, and then the government would give the money to the company, and then the company would palm that off to their employees that were still employed but no longer at work. Because if you understand, if you know a chain of retail stores, if retail shopping is shut down, what do you do with all that stuff? And so this was a program the government came up with, which, you know, had some real good merits in it.
It did.
Of keeping those people employed, even though they're not working, and then the government subsidizing them to give them some money to live on until this was over. And then they just go back to their job. But what happened was a number of companies, and quite a number of them, ended up getting more money from the government than they paid out to the staff.
Yeah.
And some of them were like tens of millions of dollars. Now, reputable, socially based companies, companies that have a social sense of morality to them, any excess money that didn't get paid out to their staff members, they returned to the government and said, you know, they're back at work now. We've got all this money. We only used a bit of it. Here's the rest of it. We'll give it back to you. Mm. Some other companies, like Harvey Norman, said, oh, we'll use that money that the government gave us to pay for our staff. We'll use that to pay bonuses to our executives.
You see, this is what gets me. And the other thing is the stock markets are doing pretty okay, aren't they?
They are.
The only people suffering are the, you know, 90% of people who are not billionaires, it seems to me, in this world of you know, the virus.
Yeah. And, of course, Jerry Harvey justified that by saying, well, they never asked for it back. They never said we'd have to pay it back.
Right.
And so the government of that? And the government said exactly the same thing. The government said, oh, we can't ask them to give it back to us. It's like, this is the same government that brought in robo-debt, which saw 2,000 or more Australians suicide over fake or false debt notices from the government, claiming, trying to get money back from the poorest people that they didn't owe them. And yet here they are giving billions of dollars to companies that they don't need. The companies don't need.
No, they're already making so much money. Harvey Norman is an electrical outfit. I mean, they sell everything. But, you know, in the COVID lockdown, people are buying a lot of electrical things and technology.
We'll have a new fridge, we'll have a new computer, we'll have a new...
Because, as we said earlier on, they've got more money. They can't go on holidays, so they're buying all this stuff.
Yeah, and we're not a nation of savers. We're a nation of spenders.
It is true, but being a first world nation...
Georgie girl, swinging down the street so fancy free. Nobody you meet could ever see the loneliness there
inside you.
Hey there, Georgie girl, why do all the boys just pass you by? Could it be you just don't try, or is it the clothes you wear? Those dowdy feathers and fly
a little bit.
Hey there, Georgie girl, there's another Georgie deep inside. Bring out all the love you hide, and oh, what a change there'd be. The world would see a new Georgie girl. Is a reality, you can't always run away.
Don't be so scared of changing and rearranging yourself.
It's time for jumping down from the shell
a little bit.
Hey there, Georgie girl, there's another Georgie deep inside. Bring out all the love you hide, and oh, what a change there'd be.
If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Adam Devlin, our political correspondent in Melbourne here in Australia. I'm Henry in Sydney. Now, you talked about suicide very briefly. In Australian media, we're not allowed to report on suicide, generally speaking. It seems to be a very Australian thing. I've got a neighbour here, and she's got two friends who... we're allowed to say this because we broadcast internationally. She's got two friends. These are friends, Asian, who committed suicide. One hung themselves from a tree on Bondi Beach, and the other, I don't know what happened to the other, but the other copied the first one. And this is appalling stuff. And she said to me, very interesting what she said to me. She's actually not Chinese. She's from South America, from Brazil. And she said, why did they do this? You know, because she's from Brazil, she said, and they don't have the same we're not looked after, she said, in Brazil, but we are in Australia. They can go on the dole, they can get money, the government looks after us here. Why did they do it? And I just said to her, well, it's mental health. You know, they don't have to have an underlying condition, but it's very stressful, Adam.
Oh, it is, absolutely. Look, the stats, there's been a massive spike in suicides. There's been a massive spike in domestic violence in this country during COVID. Mm. It's a travesty. It's an absolute tragedy that what's going on. Now, I don't know what the solution is, but I do know for myself, you know, prior to COVID, my entire social life was based around the arts.
Yes.
I was out 3 or 4 nights a week. At gallery openings, at concerts, at theatre.
Doesn't your boyfriend work in the arts or work in that sort of area?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And when I wasn't doing that, I was catching up with friends in restaurants and bars. Now, that's all finished. In 18 months, I haven't been able to go to a gallery, haven't been able to go to the theatre, haven't been able to go to concerts, haven't been able to go to a restaurant, haven't been able to meet up with friends in a pub. And I suffer from depression.
Yes.
So it's very taxing. It's very heavy for me. I'm not suicidal, so I'm lucky in that sense.
Yeah.
But I can easily understand how some people could be that way.
And, you know, my thinking about this is that these guys were in their early 20s and they were students, along with my neighbor, who's also a student. And it just seems so sad. I just want to clear something up for people who are probably screaming at me when I said, you know, who owns Zoom sort of thing. Zoom is actually a US-founded company, and its founder is Eric Yuan. He's a Chinese immigrant who is now an American citizen. Okay, now, look, a couple of other things. I know I've kept you longer than I should have, but I always do, you see. Adam, there's a census, and it's happening across Australia right now. Are you excited?
A sense of what?
A census.
Oh, a census. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yes, there is,
well, there might be a sense of excitement. I don't know. What do you think of the census?
Look, I think the census is essential. It's a great piece of public infrastructure that we need to do. You know, the census... some people don't quite understand what the census is all about. Well, you know, governments make plans on what Australia's going to look like in 10, 15, 20, 30, 50 years' time based on the information and the data they get out of the census.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's important to complete the census. Now,
you've always agreed with that, I assume.
I have, yeah.
Me too.
Usually at this time of the year, well, it happens every 5 years, I think. You'd get a knock on the door around this time of the year every 5 years, and there'd be a couple of people standing there, and they'd say, "Oh, you know, here's your census form. We'll be back in a week's time to pick it up. You need to fill this out on next Tuesday night."
In the good old days.
Mm. And then you would have this booklet, and on that night you would sit down with your family or whoever was in your house on that night, and you would go through and answer all of the questions in it, and then you'd pop it into an envelope that would be sealed, and then, you know, a week or so later they'd be knocking at the door again saying, "Can we have your census, please?" This year, of course, you know, with lockdowns and outbreaks of COVID all over the place, doing a door-to-door physical census really wasn't going to work.
Is it every 4 years, yeah?
I think it's 5.
Oh, okay.
But I could be wrong. But it's not every year. No, it's
definitely like not every year. Yeah,
it's 4 or 5 every 4 or 5 or 6 years. It's something like that. Now this year they're doing it online, which I think is the first time it's been online.
I think it is too.
Yeah. So I got my letter. I've got my letter sitting here in front of me, and it says it's time to complete your census. It's very 3-part step. Go to census.abs.gov.au. Enter my census number, which is very clearly on the form here. It's got a temporary password there for me, which I'll need to enter. I assume when I enter that, I'll get to change that password to one of my own making. And then I submit the form and I click. It needs to be done next Tuesday on the 10th of August.
You know, isn't Google wonderful? I've just checked. In Australia, it's every 5 years. And 5 years ago, I remember doing this. I always wondered why they didn't. At the time, we didn't have same-sex marriage. And I often wondered why they don't add these questions onto the census, Adam, because they never seem to, because they got such a great opportunity to get the whole bloody country, the whole population, I mean, a massive poll for other things, you know?
Absolutely. And it's a case of they do add this stuff to the census, but it's always, you know, religion, for example,
yes,
you know, they now ask what your religion is, and the options aren't just around Christianity anymore.
Yes, I bet they're not.
In the census, you know, when it would come to religion, it would be, you know, are you Catholic, are you Church of England, are you Methodist, are you Baptist, or are you other?
Nothing else.
Yeah. So now at least they've got in there, you know, are you Muslim? Are you Buddhist? Are you Hindu? Are you, you know, there's a whole range of different religions that you can select now.
Which, and it's interesting, Adam, because I'm looking at this census form as I'm speaking to you. And if you look at the back of, I'm sure you've got the same one as me. If you look at the back, look at all the languages.
Yeah.
I love that. It's about time we did this stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, of course, when you've got a backward-focused 1950s-style conservative government in place...
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that we have now?
Heaven forbid. when you've got that in place, the questions that go into the census reflect the mindset of the government of the day. So you know, we didn't for a long time have anything in there about sexuality, you know, and I'm not even sure if there is still, if you get to classify your sexuality as being heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, or any of the other variants of human sexuality.
Yes,
if it's not, it should be, because it's just as important or even more important than your religion. Because what the government would do, if that is in there and it's answered correctly, then every person who's around this country who considers themselves a non-heterosexual, they'll be counted. And so then all of a sudden the government will say, hang on, it's not just, you know, three people on Oxford Street that are gay. It's actually, they're scattered right across the country. Yes. And so then they can plan... Well, to put services in places where they're needed.
Obviously, Adam, we have not seen this because it's online. It's about to happen. Yeah. But do they have, you know, the way they say if you're male, female, other, I think they started putting in. Why can't they say transgender, queer, all that other stuff? It'd be interesting to see if they can.
Absolutely. And let's see when we get into this one, if they've done that in this. I hope they have. You know, considering that you can now legally be non-heterosexual in this country, if that makes sense.
I think it's called non-binary.
Yeah.
Is that right?
You can be cisgendered, you can be non-binary. So it's important that that sort of stuff is captured because, again, these people don't just live in inner city suburbs. They're right across the country.
I saw an interview on the ABC, the national broadcaster, about a gay farmer. I think I sent a link to you. And it was really interesting because he had a boyfriend, he had a partner, and he would go to Sydney because he lived in the country area in New South Wales. And they broke up and it was all too tough. And this is, I guess, what I'm saying is that this is an example of the fact that LGBTQI, I get this wrong every time, are everywhere. They really are everywhere, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I've said this to many times when, you know, they discover that I'm gay. You know, not so much now, but certainly when I was younger, I'd get people saying, "Oh my God, you're the first gay person I know." And my standard response to that was, "No, that's not true."
And of course, you're from a country town.
you know gay people. It's just they haven't come out to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, we've got to go soon because I've kept you so long. A couple of other subjects before I let you go.
Yep.
The monster that I call it a monster. Amazon is offering staff $140 to get the jab. Now, we talked earlier on about giving people free pizza. What are your thoughts on this? From a company doesn't treat their staff very well,
Couldn't they just pay them adequately?
Oh, that's an idea. And let them go to the loo whenever they want.
And let them have toilet breaks when they actually need to go to the toilet?
Yeah. We're going to get sued for sure.
And maybe Jeff Bezos or whatever his name is that owns Amazon.
Bezos. He likes to fly into space, you know, as
yeah,
a hobby.
Maybe he can spend a little less money on space and actually pay some taxes.
Well, yeah, there's a call, isn't it? This seems to me like a massive... I mean, look, I'm all for paying the staff $140 to get the jab, but it's a massive PR campaign. It's a massive...
For starters, as I said earlier, not dying is all the incentive I need to get the vaccine. I don't need $140 to make me go and do it. So it is just a marketing exercise for this company, particularly a company that's got such an appalling record of treatment of its staff.
Yes.
For them to now be able to... And that's exactly what they'll be doing. They'll be knowing, oh, look, what great corporate citizens we are. Look, we're paying our staff to get vaccinated. We need them vaccinated. We're paying them to do it. Actually, just pay them to do their job and they won't need your $140.
That's right. Pay them properly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, when I first came across Amazon... Can you believe this, Adam? It was 1996 when Amazon just sold books. That was it.
That must have not been long after Amazon started.
It was very much when they started. Mm. And all they did was, show me. My girlfriend's a writer. And I was interested in Amazon as a kind of an online bookseller. And that's all it was. Mm. What happened to Amazon? They turned into a monster. Well, that's just my view, by the way, in case you're thinking of sue me, Amazon.
Yeah, no, look, I agree with you. And what happened is that it's owned by a monster.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is, this is a controversial statement and I probably shouldn't say it, but I'm going to.
Oh, go on.
Anyone who's earning billions of dollars a year, no one earns billions of dollars a year.
Mm.
You're getting that money off the labor and the services and other people.
Yes.
So, I just... personally, I think... no one needs more than $1 billion.
No, I don't think so.
No one needs more than $1 billion.
No.
Once you get to $1 billion, you should be taxed until that's, until you fall under 100% taxation.
You know, like in the Nordic countries, like in Sweden, Norway, Denmark, they tax the hell out of the very wealthy. And I have no... I know I'm a bit of a socialist, Adam, but I have no problem with that. I would pay it. If I was making $1 billion a year, I'd pay the 93%, whatever it is, tax.
Would they notice? Would Jeff Bezos notice it?
Bozo. I don't think he would. He's too busy flying into space.
He's got his money. He's set for life. He'll never be
short of anything. He's got so much money that even sending a rocket into, the edges of space is a bit of fun for him.
It's like you or I going to the pub and putting $100 on the bar.
Yeah, that's right. Robo-debt. What's going on in Australia with robo-debt? We've got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah. There's been, of course, robo-debt, we've talked about this several times. Mm. And it's a system that the government brought in whereby they would estimate how much welfare you were entitled to. And then if you were paid more than that, they would just send you a debt notice and then start debt collection processes against you.
Yeah.
It resulted in over 2,000 Australians suiciding. It was found by the High... Yes. It was found by the High Court to be illegal, what they were doing, and so they scrapped it. But very concerningly, we've noticed today, I saw a story that the government around childcare this time, are sending out notices going back 3 to 4 years to people saying, you know, one woman that I read today, she got two bills totaling over $11,000, and they're due at the end of the month.
Now, that made the media. So what will happen in her case? Will they try and, you know, clean up their mess?
Oh, God, no. This government doesn't do that. They'll tough it out. They'll push it through until it becomes a major scandal again, like it did last year. Mm. Or the year before, sorry. And so, you know, they just, this government doesn't learn from its mistakes.
No. Okay.
And we're going to have more innocent people driven further into debt, further into poverty, and potentially into suicide because this government's doing the same old trick again.
Yeah. Okay, Adam, we got to go. I will get back to you later with your musical pick of the week. Thank you for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Henry.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Girl, we made it to the top. We went so high, we couldn't stop. We climbed the ladder leading us nowhere. Two of us together, building castles in the air. We spun so fast we couldn't tell the gold ring from the carousel. How could we know the ride would turn out bad? Everything we wanted, everything we have. I miss the hungry years, the once upon a time, the lovely long ago. We didn't have a dime. Those days of me and you, we lost along the way. So blind not to see the door closing on the world I now hunger for, looking through my tears. I miss the hungry years. We shared our daydreams one by one, making plans was so much fun. We set our goals and reached the highest star. Things that we were after were much better from afar. Here we stand, just me and you, with everything and nothing too. It wasn't worth the price we had to pay. Honey, take me home. Let's go back to yesterday. I miss the hungry years, the once upon a time, the lovely long ago. We didn't have a dime. Those days of me and you, we lost along the way. How could I be so blind not to see the door closing on the world for, looking through my tears. I miss the hungry years. I miss the hungry years.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.